I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
Crossing another threshold on the road to reopening, 20 months in the making, the U.S. welcomes back non-essential travelers. Why some say it's the trip home that's now generating the extra gridlock. Good evening. It's been a long wait to cross the world's longest undefended border.
It's a moment you'd probably expect to be met with universal excitement, but there remains a big obstacle for those heading north. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live in Niagara Falls tonight with more. Beth.
Michelle, it's just over 18 hours that Canadians can cross into the U.S. for those non-essential trips, but it doesn't feel like there's a lot of fanfare. Yes, it's a Monday, which tends to be slower, but many are blaming the cost and hassle of a negative PCR test to come back as the reason for the slowdown.
The gates are finally open to visit family.
It's been hard because I live in Niagara Falls. We retired. And my daughter lives in Lewiston with my grandchildren.
To assist a relative that's ill.
And for fun.
We're killing time because we thought we'd have a big lineup at the border, and we didn't.
After 20 months, Canadians can drive to the United States for those non-essential trips. The big moment at midnight.
This morning we did see some backups heading into the U.S. A lot of RVs, a lot of motorhomes, so we're anticipating that was probably individuals, snowbirds, who. But other than that, it's been relatively quiet.
To cross, you'll need to be double vaccinated. Coming home, a negative PCR test within 72 hours of your return, which can cost between $150 and $300.
We're all against it, and if you have a family, it's a lot of money.
You can carry the germ. And that's why they want this done.
When it comes to short day or weekend trips, Canadians can get the test before leaving home. Even doctors point out doing so doesn't reflect possibly picking up COVID while away.
And once you come into Canada, you might then go on to develop symptoms and end up being infected.
At Niagara Duty Free, concerns the required test has been and will continue to hurt already struggling businesses. U.S. citizens have been allowed in Canada since August.
What we're finding is that the Americans that are coming over, the numbers are very small. We're actually doing probably 10 to 15% of what the type of business we should be doing this time of year.
Still, the reopening is helping families get back to normal. 17-year-old Jake McConnery moved from St. Catharines to play soccer in Rochester. The trip to see mom is now back to a 90-minute drive instead of an expensive plane ticket, an 8-hour journey through Toronto.
It's really nice. I can go back and forth for training, and yeah, it's good that it's open finally.
A once routine crossing. A long time coming.
The Canada Border Services Agency is reminding people the rapid antigen test will not be accepted when coming home back to Canada. Reporting live in Niagara Falls, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And you can review the updated border crossing rules on our website. Our online team is also tracking the reaction among mayors and business owners. You'll find it all at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
And just ahead, vaccination is required to cross into the States. And here in Ontario, more people are lining up to get their third doses. The excitement among those eligible for another shot of protection.
But first, to the growing impact of a cyber attack at the TTC. Turns out the personal information of thousands may have been stolen.
Everything from names, addresses, and social insurance numbers. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott, who could this affect?
Well, Nathan, it could affect TTC employees, former TTC employees, and their warnings, even small group of customers and vendors. The TTC says they're still trying to determine just exactly how far and wide the effects of this hack go, and they warn that more information could come out in the coming days and weeks. But they say at this point, it does not appear that any of the personal information that hackers may have had access to has been used.
They've been dealing with the effects of a cyber attack for more than a week, but today, word from the Toronto Transit Commission that hackers may have accessed more than originally thought.
Where were they? What did they see? What do we have in our systems? And that's when we realized, right, that we know that we have some personal information of our employees that could have or may could have been compromised.
That information includes employee and former employee names, addresses, and social insurance numbers. The TTC is also investigating whether a small number of customers and vendors may have had their personal information breached as well.
We are actually blindsided with this information with this press release. We believe it's unacceptable.
The union representing some 12,000 TTC employees says they asked the commission more than a week ago for details of the cyber attack, but didn't get word until moments before the TTC made the news public today.
We need to know exactly what information was compromised, whether it's medical information, financial, banking, and other information. And, you know, why are we finding out 20 minutes before everybody finds out?
The TTC says hackers managed to encrypt and lock their computer servers, which resulted in the shutdown of communication systems, vehicle arrival information systems, and online booking for Wheel-Trans customers. Many of those systems have now been restored, but the commission's corporate email remains offline. At this point, officials say there's no evidence that any personal information has been misused.
Right now, we have no knowledge of misuse of any information, and I think I have to make that clear. We're just being proactive by taking these steps now to make sure we protect that for the individuals.
The TTC says part of that protection will involve 3 years of free credit monitoring and identity theft protection for all impacted by the breach.
And the TTC has set up both a dedicated website and dedicated telephone line that employees and former employees can use to get more information on the hack, as well as the credit protection that is being offered to them. Reporting live on Eastern Ave, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. Turning next to the moments of chaos at a weekend music festival in Texas. 8 people killed amid a crowd crush.
Tonight, Drake is among those named in a lawsuit connected to the tragedy. The rapper accused of inciting the audience. CTV's Zoraida Allman is live in studio tonight with more Zoraida.
Michelle and Nathan, with the criminal investigation now underway to determine how the crowds got so out of control, killing 8. Now civil lawsuits are being filed. Toronto rapper Drake among those named.
It was Drake's guest appearance at this weekend's deadly Astroworld Festival in Houston that now has him named in a lawsuit by a concertgoer who was injured in the stampede. The lawsuit alleges Drake helped incite the crowd as he came on stage. It reads in part, Drake put himself out on stage alongside of Travis Scott and continued to be on stage, performing alongside with Travis Scott as the crowd became out of control. It goes on to say Drake even continued to perform on stage while the crowd mayhem continued. Officials say there were about 50,000 people in attendance that night. And as Travis Scott appeared, the crowds rushing the stage.
Our barricade even started to break, yeah, and the security had to come over to us and like start strapping the rails
until it got out of control.
I was telling people like there are dead bodies over there and nobody believed me.
8 people were killed, hundreds more injured.
We're grieving for all the families that lost their loved ones in this horrendous event.
Travis Scott posting a message to fans this weekend on Instagram.
I'm honestly just devastated and I could never imagine anything like this just happening.
He says he is working with the community to help support the families through this tough time.
And local media now reporting that Travis Scott plans to pay for the funerals for the victims and refund everyone who attended the concert. Meanwhile, Drake so far has remained silent on the whole incident. I'm Zoraida Allman. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Zoraida. Yes, it's dark out there, but how about those temperatures today? So comfortable for this time of year. A big change from even a few days ago. Jessica Smith joins us tonight to deliver the mild details. Jessica, what a day.
Michelle, it feels more like late summer, early fall than really heading in towards the middle of November. We've been on the warmer side of the jet stream to get the week started, and that's what's bringing all of this warm weather. High pressure remains in place, keeping a really quiet end to our day. The sunshine really welcome for most. Temperature-wise, sitting around 15 to about 18 degrees really across parts of southwestern Ontario, a little cooler towards Bancroft, but we're sitting around 15 through Waterloo, 11 in Oshawa, Welland at 16. Right now in towards areas to Toronto Islands, 13 degrees, 15 towards Pearson. But tonight in Toronto, 7 degrees. The warmth sticking around as we head into the evening and the day tomorrow. But we're keeping a close eye on some active weather. Michelle?
Thank you.
An elementary school in Scarborough is closed because of a COVID-19 outbreak. Precious Blood Catholic School on Pharmacy, south of Lawrence, has been temporarily closed as a precautionary measure. Toronto Public Health says lab results identify 13 cases in the school among 11 students and two staff. TPH has notified close contacts, and they've been asked to stay at home and get tested.
Whenever there's a cohort that is dismissed, and of course, in this instance, it's about 380 students that we're asking to conduct their learning from home. We know that, you know, there are challenges with doing that, but we know our teachers have been really amazing with supporting our students when they are learning at home and when that pivot is required. This is our first this year where we have a school that the entire school is being dismissed. But I know, again, there were instructions shared by the principal yesterday to families asking that students connect this morning online.
The board says the school could be closed for up to 14 days pending the outcome of the Toronto Public Health investigation.
Meanwhile, Public Health Ontario is reporting 480 new cases in its most recent update. 289 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. Nearly 23,000 tests were processed over the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 2.2%.
238 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 590,000 over the course of the pandemic. Two additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,900 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 53 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 39 in both Peel Region and York. There are 29 new cases in Niagara, with 14 in Durham. Hamilton logged 11 new cases, with 10 in Halton Region.
Turning to the vaccination effort, millions of people are able to roll up their sleeves to get a third shot.
Expanded eligibility for the booster coming into effect over the weekend, our Janice Golding reports.
A steady stream of people made their way into the Scarborough Health Network's COVID-19 vaccine clinic at Centennial College today.
It went smooth. Everything was smooth. They were very organized in there.
Several groups of higher-risk Ontarians now eligible to book booster shots.
I feel great. I didn't expect it this early, and I'm really, really happy to get it.
I want to protect myself and the others, too.
I mean, I'm an older gentleman, and I want to add a few more years to my life and not risk anything.
You feel safer. You feel more protected. Each and every day you come into work, you're exposed, and we expose other people, too.
250,000 people were already eligible for third shots, meaning people who are immunocompromised or who live in long-term care and retirement homes. But over the weekend, an additional 2.75 million people became eligible for boosters.
Currently, we are welcoming people who are over the age of 70 and healthcare workers who've had their vaccines over 6 months ago.
Also included, essential caregivers in congregate settings, people who received two doses of AstraZeneca or one dose of Janssen, and First Nations, Inuit, and Métis adults, and anyone in their households. Important to note that while those who are eligible for their third shots must book their appointments online, anyone who needs a first or second dose is still able to walk in for a shot.
Now you're going to do it.
Well, next semester we have to have our vaccines in order to be on campus, and there's no online classes. So,
while healthcare officials say two doses still protect the general public quite well after 6 months, especially against serious illness and death, vulnerable populations are at increased risk of waning immunity.
Just because the antibody titers can start going down, so we just want to make sure that everyone still continues to be protected.
The province is eventually planning to offer booster doses to everyone starting early next year. Janice Golding, CTV News.
Across the province, more than 88.4% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 85% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. And that represents nearly 11.1 million people in Ontario.
A heart-wrenching search began today at the site of a former residential school in Saskatchewan.
Today's somewhat a good day and somewhat a sad day because, you know, now that we're starting that process, and I hope that, you know, a lot of our people from near and far, that they can get that closure that they're looking for.
The Star Blanket Cree Nation is using ground-penetrating radar at multiple locations near the former LeBret Indian Industrial School. Children from many surrounding First Nations were forced to attend. It was one of the first residential schools to open and the last to close in 1998. The search for unmarked graves will be done in three phases and is expected to take 3 years.
Canadians are paying tribute to the thousands of Indigenous soldiers who fought in the service of this country. But Indigenous Veterans Day is also drawing attention to the discrimination they faced.
When those decorated warriors had come back from those wars where they were fighting with what they felt were their brothers, the moment that they set their foot back on Canadian soil, they were made well aware of the systemic racism that still existed. And unfortunately, they were not acknowledged the way they should have been, and they were not acknowledged at the same level as other veterans were.
A ceremony was held this morning at the National Aboriginal Veterans Monument in Ottawa. It's estimated that over 12,000 Indigenous Canadians joined the military during the First and Second World Wars and the Korean War. More than 500 of them did not make it home, and countless more were injured. There are currently more than 2,500 Indigenous members of the Canadian Armed Forces.
Flags on federal buildings were lowered to half-mast this morning in honor of Indigenous Veterans Day. They had been raised at sunset yesterday for the first time since May 30th. That's when flags were lowered in honor of Indigenous children who were abused or who died at residential schools. The flags were hoisted again at sunset today, but will be lowered on Thursday for Remembrance Day, then raised again until National Truth and Reconciliation Day on September 30th.
Meanwhile, here in Toronto, a special display is paying tribute to those who serve.
As well as those who made the ultimate sacrifice. CTV's John Musselman reports.
It is so large you can see it from the condo tower surrounding Fort York. A massive 80 by 60 foot painting by Indigenous artist Jay Soul, also known as Chippewar. This is a temporary art project at the historic site in recognition of Indigenous Veterans Day. The artist started at 8 o'clock last night and worked through the night to complete the piece at 4 a.m.
Yeah, look at that.
That's awesome.
It's a very sad piece, you know. It's the blood that's dripping from the flag. It's really showing the blood that's been shed in the war and the war that continues to be fought and the blood that was shed by the children. And so it's a call to action. It's about reconciliation and it's about acknowledging these truths that have been erased.
The work is presented as We Remember. It's part of the city's Awakening program that gives voice to different artists. Fort York was the site chosen to honor Indigenous warriors who fought during the War of 1812. Thousands of Indigenous people served in both World Wars and the Korean War, but that sacrifice was not always recognized or acknowledged. November 8th is now Indigenous Veterans Day.
It's an important piece. You know, when I first saw it, I had goosebumps and I had chills everywhere. The artist is an incredible artist, Jay Soul. And it's just a very important piece that's open to interpretation, has many layers of deep meaning and importance.
Words from the artist on this piece, quote, "For the fallen Indigenous warriors who gave their lives to a country who tried to exterminate them, used, discarded, and forgotten like they never existed. On this day, we remember and honor them for the fallen but not forgotten." We are told this work can withstand the elements barring a massive downpour. This special exhibit can be viewed between the hours of 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. all week long at historic Fort York. John Musselman, CTV News.
In Glasgow, Barack Obama called out two countries today for not doing their share to combat climate change.
I have to confess, it was particularly discouraging to see the leaders of two of the world's largest emitters, China and Russia, declined to even attend the proceedings. And their national plans so far reflect what appears to be a dangerous lack of urgency.
The former U.S. president addressed delegates at the U.N. climate summit. Barack Obama urged young people to pressure their leaders, saying his generation has not done enough.
A warning about some of the disturbing details in this next story. Our detective series revisiting the crimes that shocked this city.
Tonight, the 2008 murder of Felicia Hosani, found dead inside her flower shop. CTV's Austin Delaney's live with more. Austin.
Well, this is another of those unforgettable homicides in the city of Toronto where the detective in charge has to clear his suspects, those closest to the victim. The victim suffocated. Her head had been duct taped. The detective thought her husband's alibi was too good to be true.
It was a cold February night back in 2008 when a husband, worried about his wife, popped by her Downsview flower shop to check on her well-being.
I see everything ramsacked, and the first thing I pushed the bathroom door a little bit, and I see my wife was all on this duct tape and whatnot. I get so frightened, my legs were shaking, I didn't know what to do.
Felicia Hosani was just 51 years old when she suffocated to death because of duct tape that was tightly wound around her head.
I'd seen gunshot, I've seen stab wound, I've seen poisons, I've seen people jump in front of trains. These are all ways you expect people to be killed. But when you see a person duct tape from her, their entire head is duct taped and they can't breathe.
At the time, CP24's crime analyst Steve Ryan was a homicide investigator assigned to solve the case. He brought Hosani's husband in for questioning right away.
He came into 32. And I interviewed him for probably 3 hours. And it was more of an interrogation where I accused him of killing his wife. I accused him over and over and over again of doing that.
Ryan thought his alibi was too good to be true.
His alibi was perfect. When I talked to him about where were you at 8 o'clock, oh, I have a gas receipt. Here's where I got my gas. Where were you at 8:30? Oh, here's where I went to bingo. Here's my receipt for my bingo card.
But in the end, Rafiq Hosani's alibi proved airtight. This was a robbery gone wrong. The investigation turned to two men, the holdup squad had arrested, for similar robberies, including another flower shop owner who was duct taped. DNA left from tearing the duct tape with their teeth would link the two men to the murder.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, how are you, Steve? Long time, man.
Oh, no kidding.
More than a decade after the killing, Ryan met up with Hosani's son, Greg, recalling when he accused the man's father of killing his mother.
Did he ever tell you the story how I interviewed him and actually accused him? I had to, right? You're laughing now because he laughs at it. He laughed at it too at the time. Did he ever tell you that story?
Yes, when we went to go pick him up from the station, he's like, actually, these, I don't want to say what he said, were accusing me of doing the crime and this and that. And, you know, we have to explain to him, well, you were first on scene. They're going to question you that way, right? So, yes, he did. He did tell me.
And you know, I apologized to him many times over the years for that, and I was hoping to do that again. And I was very sad to find out that your dad had passed, and with a broken heart, I'm sure, because he loved your mom.
Yes.
I remember him telling me that.
Well, 100%. I feel a part of him really died when she died.
Both accused were charged with first-degree murder. The younger, turning Crown's witness, agreeing to a manslaughter plea and 10 years. The jury found the other guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter. The judge giving him no parole for 18 years. And Felicia's daughter, so distraught, she didn't utter a word following the murder for years. Then she ran into Ryan in a mall 4 years later.
And I heard a detective, and I turned around, and it was Felicia Hosani's daughter who was at the mall. She recognized me, and she approached me.
Hugging Ryan, and in a clear voice, thanked the detective for finding her mom's killer. Austin Delaney, CTV News.
And in my podcast released today with Steve Ryan, Ryan talks very candidly about what it's like as a homicide investigator to walk into these horrible scenes day in, day out, solve the crime, and then go home at night. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. And you can subscribe to The Detective on iHeart or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can visit our website for more details from the investigations.
Still ahead, an incredible rescue in the U.S. with a Canadian connection. A missing teen uses a special hand signal to quietly alert motorists of her abduction.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, a Mississauga man was shocked when a stranger set his SUV on fire, and he was even more surprised to get a bill from the fire department for putting it out. He's not sure why he's being charged. We investigate all of that story just ahead.
It was almost a record-breaking day here in Toronto. The record was 18.7. We got to about 19 degrees today, or just below that, pardon me. We're looking at the warm weather sticking around as we head throughout the overnight, and this ridge of high pressure keeping us sunny and clear. It is going to move out, and we are watching for a little more in the way of active weather as we head in towards the end of the day tomorrow. So for the kids heading off to school, they won't need the rain gear to start, but they'll need it on the way home. We're watching the showers to roll in as we head in through the noon hour, and they stick around as we head through the second part of the day. So you will need all of that rain gear as you head throughout your afternoon and into the evening tomorrow. We're not looking at a significant amount of rain, but enough to make it potentially a little tricky as you head out on the roads. The good news, though, the winds stay relatively light from start to finish throughout the day tomorrow. So although we will have rain, it won't be too bad. We'll be back in just 2 minutes with more news ahead.
If you ever have a fire, you sure want the fire department to get there right away and extinguish the flames.
But you may not know that some fire departments are now billing for their services depending on what they have to deal with. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Nathan and Michelle, a Mississauga man was shocked when a stranger set his SUV on fire. The fire department came and put it out, but 8 months later he got a bill for more than $1,000, and he's not sure why.
I'm living this nightmare of watching my truck burn all over again.
It was in April when an arsonist set fire to Gary Follett's SUV. He was living at a Mississauga apartment building when at 3 in the morning, someone set his vehicle on fire. It was completely engulfed in flames and destroyed.
It's my truck. My truck was on fire. So I scrambled, ran downstairs and four floors and got out there, and there was a couple of fire trucks.
An investigation found it was a random act of arson, and his insurance paid for the SUV. Follett has since moved to Cambridge, where he bought a home. He just got a bill from a collections agency.
There was a bill for $1,000 and said I owe the city of Mississauga over $1,000. 5 months living here in Cambridge, and all of a sudden I get a bill from the city of Mississauga from something that happened almost 8 months ago.
Follett said he can't get anyone to tell him why he received the bill and why he owes Mississauga $1,000.
Collections is telling me to go to Mississauga. City of Mississauga is telling me to go to collections. So nobody is answering any of the questions that I have.
We contacted the city of Mississauga and were told the $1,000 charge is the cost of a special foam that was used to put out the fire. A spokesperson said, when our firefighters arrived on the scene, there was evidence of an accelerant having been used. Accelerants require a fire suppression foam additive. The invoice was issued due to the use of fire suppression foam. Charges are a standard billing practice to help manage the high cost of materials in emergency situations. Follett said he thought his taxes covered the cost of fire services, and he isn't happy that he has to pay the bill.
A $1,000 bill is something I don't need right now, now or any other time.
And the city said extra charges to put out fires can sometimes be recouped by your insurance company, but Follett says his claim was closed months ago. Still, he's going to try because he feels it's a charge that he shouldn't have to pay. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Right, everybody's talking about the weather today. It did feel like it was spring.
Oh, just gorgeous. I can't believe how warm it got. And it is a nice trade-off because I know we gained an hour over the weekend, but seeing it dark at 5 o'clock, it makes you a bit sad. But you're bringing the sunshine, Jessica.
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying. We had a perfect start to the week, a ton of sunshine, low wind, and we're looking at temperatures close to record breaking in some communities. Now we're still holding on to that heat, but we're looking at a change coming up. Weather brought to you by Train, the most reliable and heating, cooling and brand. It's hard to stop a train. Now, temperature-wise, we are going to continue with this heat as we head through the overnight and into the day tomorrow. But it comes at a bit of a price because we're going to see the chance of active weather rolling in later in the day. Temperature-wise right now, though, still quite comfortable across much of southwestern Ontario. Sitting at 12 through Windsor, 15 for Toronto, 12 over Muskoka, Ottawa, a little cooler, but not by much at 10. Through Red Lake to the north, they're feeling the cool down a little sooner, but they're about to experience potentially some pretty significant weather. We'll show you that in a moment. Thunder Bay sitting at 8 degrees. Now, that system we're keeping a close eye on. Right now, it's a low tracking from parts of Western Canada and the prairies, and even towards the Midwestern United States. They are going to meet in the middle and eventually bring some pretty significant weather as we head in towards the middle and end of the week. And that's prompting a special weather statement for parts of Northern Ontario from Wednesday through to Friday. And some areas could see potentially anywhere from 20 to 40 centimeters of snow. So although we escaped it to get the week started, we're looking at active weather for parts of Ontario. For Toronto, more in the way of a rain event as we head in towards the middle of the week. But tonight, 7 degrees. Pretty nice if you're getting out for a late day walk. Winds will stay relatively calm. And as we get into the day tomorrow, starting things off pretty warm again at 8. Now, As we head into the day tomorrow, we'll start off with a few peaks of sunshine, but we are watching for increasing cloud, and then there's that chance of rain middle of the day towards the supper hour. But we're looking at around 13 degrees through Waterloo, 14 in Toronto, 13 in Peterborough, so everybody staying above seasonal. Now, that is going to change, but we get through the majority of the week anyways with the warmer weather. Now, as we head throughout the day, we're going to see our clear skies become not so clear. That cloud cover really starts to settle in, and that's as that low tracks its way across northern Ontario, and then we'll feel it here to the south as well. Now, we're watching this low, this system, make its way across. There's the one going to the north, but another one coming from the prairies that meets up with some low pressure systems coming from the U.S. And that's what's going to bring the rain as we head into the later part of the day tomorrow. Now, our forecast radar giving you an idea of what you can expect timing wise. Now, through the morning, not so bad, just generally cloudy skies. But it's as we head into the afternoon where this band starts to roll in across southern Ontario. And then it really settles in as we head in towards the supper hour and 7 o'clock. So keep that in mind timing wise. The good news, the system moves relatively quickly, and as we head into Wednesday, a bit of a break. So we will see some sunshine. We have that little bit of rain rolling in tomorrow, although we stay warm. And then as that system rolls out, we feel the cool down with our temperatures. So 7 degrees for the overnight low on Tuesday, getting into Wednesday, sunshine, but cooler, closer to seasonal. Now, we're keeping a close eye on Thursday, Remembrance Day. A lot of the ceremonies happening early on. We should stay relatively clear. So a few peaks of sunshine here and there. It's as we get into the later part of the day that we watch for the chance of showers and an overnight low of 5. Getting in towards the end of the week, well, the cool down really settles in and we have more seasonal temperatures and then just below. Getting in towards Saturday and Sunday, we will see the chance of showers that kick off our weekend, but that clears out. And then a mix of sun and cloud as we roll into our very sunny Sunday. Getting in towards the beginning of next week, right now, generally cloudy conditions, but we are watching for the outside chance of some showers to return. So we began the week nice and warm, temperatures well above seasonal, but it is going to change as we head in towards the end of the week. So something to keep in mind as you wrap things up. All right, I'm going to throw it back over to Nathan and Michelle.
All right, thank you, Jessica. Also tonight, after a lengthy pandemic-related stretch, the circus is coming back to town. When you'll be able to catch the first Cirque du Soleil show since 2019, and where.
On air, online, on every platform.
A story you'll only see here.
CTV News Toronto, winner of the RTDNA Award for Best Breaking News.
Another record has been broken.
Watch weeknights at 6.
It's a case raising questions around COVID-19 and organ donation.
The death of an American woman who had suffered from long-haul symptoms. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
Heidi Ferrer was a screenwriter for shows like Dawson's Creek, and she suffered tremendously from long-haul COVID, but did not die of it. She had registered as an organ donor, but her husband worried that the organs might not be safe for recipients.
Scientists in Germany examined 27 people who died of COVID-19, and they found the virus in more than 60% of their hearts and kidneys.
There have been reports that, viral antigens have been found in different organs, but we have not seen any evidence that that particular virus that's found in different organs is able to multiply.
Viral antigens are fragments of the coronavirus. Dr. Deepali Kumar from UHN says organ donation rules are set by the province, and currently former COVID-19 patients are able to donate their organs as long as a minimum of 21 days has passed since they tested negative for the virus.
So we do two swabs. One is a nasopharyngeal swab for the upper respiratory tract, and the other is what's called an endotracheal aspirate.
Why do some long-haul patients get such severe illness even after the virus has left their system?
It's thought to be your immune system that is causing all this rather than the virus itself.
Kidneys are the most commonly transplanted organs in Canada, followed by livers, lungs, and hearts. Dr. Kumar says risks and benefits are always being weighed in transplants.
During this time of COVID, we have really done our best to make the organ supply as safe as possible.
And she says the province is constantly evaluating its procedures. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Possible listeria contamination has prompted the recall of some mushrooms sold in Ontario. Packages of Carlton brand sliced white, organic sliced white, and sliced cremini mushrooms are being called back. So are PC organic brand sliced white mushrooms. They were sold in 227-gram packages. Any with a best before date of November 8th should be thrown out or returned to point of purchase.
Van Morrison is being sued for defamation by Northern Ireland's health minister. The Belfast-born singer opposes lockdowns, and he's written several songs about it. But now legal action's been launched after Morrison criticized Robin Swan, calling him a fraud and very dangerous. A hearing's expected in early 2022.
The Big Top is returning to Toronto.
After a two-year absence, Cirque du Soleil is bringing back the magic to Ontario Place. An event was held today to promote the limited run beginning April 14th. The Montreal-based circus company will feature its critically acclaimed spectacle, Curious Cabinet of Curiosities. Cirque's president and CEO calls Toronto a special place for the troupe. He insists the shows will not only be entertaining, but offer another benefit to the city.
We have generated in 2019 over $20 million of economy in Toronto by our own expenses, by the tourism that we brought, and we're proud of it.
Cirque du Soleil has been performing in Las Vegas since June. Its last show in Toronto was in December 2019.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
It would be great if we could travel again without having to do any testing.
Updating our top stories, the U.S. land border reopened today to fully vaccinated Canadians. But there's criticism over the requirement that any travelers coming back to Canada will have to provide a negative PCR test taken within 72 hours of their return. The test costs between $150 and $300.
We have no knowledge of misuse of any information, and I think I have to make that clear. We're just being proactive by taking these steps now to make sure we protect that for the individuals.
The TTC is working on a protection plan after learning hackers may have stolen personal information belonging to up to 25,000 current and former employees last week.
There weren't enough people to help him. They did not have the right equipment. He did not need to die.
Drake and Travis Scott have been named in a lawsuit following a deadly incident at Scott's Astroworld Music Festival in Houston. Eight people were killed during a stampede, and the lawsuit alleges Drake and Scott did not stop performing, even while first responders tried to help those in distress.
Remember to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if ever you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
In business, financial companies tend to be lucrative investments, and shareholders in Sun Life Financial are getting fatter dividend checks. Andrew Bell of B&M Bloomberg has more.
Hello there. Early in the COVID pandemic, the regulator for Canada's big financial firms said they weren't allowed to increase dividends. The idea was to ensure they had plenty of cash to weather the storm. Now, that ban on dividend increases was removed last week, and the dividend hikes are already coming in. Sun Life Financial is increasing its payout to shareholders by 20% to 66 cents a share. That's per quarter. And Manulife has already increased its rate. The big Canadian banks are soon expected to follow suit. In fact, some analysts think that BMO and National Bank of Canada could increase their dividends by 30% or more. Let's check in on the markets. The Canadian dollar today traded at 80.36 cents US, up a fraction. Oil, North American WTI, changed hands at $81.93, up 66 cents. WCS oil, the Alberta specialty, traded at $62.16, up $2.11. And the TSX closed at a new record high of 21,556.54, up just under 101 points. That's the latest in business. I'm Andrew Bell of BNN Bloomberg.
Premier Doug Ford is announcing new details of the Bradford Bypass Highway project. It will connect the 400 to the 404.
We know that this new bypass helped get people where they need to go much faster. And we also know it will help to get goods to the market faster.
The four-lane highway north of Newmarket, which will be fully funded by the province, is expected to save commuters and truckers 35 minutes each way. It will create 700 construction jobs, but shovels won't be in the ground until at least early 2023. An environmental assessment is currently underway. Well, are you planning your trip south yet? The U.S. land border reopening is top of mind for many today.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Beatrice Vaisman. Beatrice, you'll be hearing from some former ambassadors on both sides of the border.
We will, Nathan. This is an incredibly important day for thousands of Canadians, from vacationers to day trippers and families who have not been able to get together for some 20 months. Finally, the U.S.-Canada land border reopens to non-essential travel. So we've got some interesting conversations on this very topic tonight. We'll hear from some tourism sector experts who will talk about what this means for the economy. We'll also hear from two ambassadors as well. What does this mean for these two nations who are so incredibly interconnected?
And Reshmi, you'll also be taking a closer look at the lawsuit that's been filed after 8 people were killed at the Astroworld Festival.
Yes, Michelle, it's one of the most read articles on CP24.com. Drake named in a lawsuit, a $1 million lawsuit, one of a few launched already following that deadly scene in Houston. We're going to talk about the history of these deadly scenes at concerts and this avoidable tragedy and the outcome of this lawsuit coming up on CP24 tonight.
Reshmi and Beatrice, thank you so much. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
It's the Made in Canada hand signal for help, popularized online, that's saving lives.
The desperate SOS from a kidnapped teenager spotted by a keen-eyed driver who called police. CTV's Sean Lethong reports.
This silent signal created here in Canada to help women who are in distress has played a major role in saving a 16-year-old girl in the United States.
It was definitely such a relief to see not only that this young woman in such a dangerous situation could use the signal, but that people knew how to respond to the signal.
You may remember this commercial.
I know your mom is a great baker, so I should be good.
From the Canadian Women's Foundation, created in April 2020, aimed at helping those in lockdown who may be in a dangerous situation at home.
I was really surprised by how viral it went so quickly. We released it in April, and by July of 2020, we found that 1 in 3 people in Canada had heard of the signal for help or saw it being used. And it went viral all around the world. Over 70 countries shared it.
The signal gained traction on social media, particularly on TikTok.
If you see someone do this, call 911.
With multiple posts aimed at teaching young women how to quietly call for help. And that is exactly what a 16-year-old girl was doing through the passenger window of a car on the I-75 South in Kentucky a little after noon this past Thursday.
There was some people behind her that noticed that she was making hand gestures that signifies for, I need help.
The girl, who was from North Carolina, had been missing since Tuesday. She was taken by a man in a car to Ohio. And then the two of them were headed back down south when she was spotted. Those who saw the signal called 911, following the car she was in for nearly 15 kilometers until police were able to make a traffic stop.
We don't know how long coming down the interstate from Ohio that she had been doing this to other motorists, hoping that they would notice that she was in distress.
61-year-old James Herbert Brick was arrested and is facing charges of unlawful imprisonment and possession of material showing a sexual performance by a minor. A crime that could have been worse were it not for a hand signal.
What a powerful thing. Signal is only as good as it's responded to.
Knowing that this signal can convey the most important of messages understood by so many, and it's working. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
Just ahead, there's a gleaming new statue making a statement across the street from the Hockey Hall of Fame. The meaning behind the monument.
And a reminder, the CTV News at 6 podcast is available as a download every weeknight. And you can also listen to the newscast live on News Talk 1010.
Get Toronto's top stories, breaking news alerts, and watch live. Download the CTV News app.
Coming up on CP24 tonight, reaping border benefits. How Ontario travelers are boosting American businesses. U.S. travel experts join live. And cannabis clash. Why city councillors want to press pause on new dispensary licenses. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
It's a stone's throw from the Hockey Hall of Fame, but the goal remains out of reach for many.
A new statue has been erected to highlight gender disparity in hockey. It's titled, This Game is for Us All. The Professional Women's Hockey Players Association and Budweiser Canada teamed up to send a message that there should be greater female representation in the sport and greater visibility for women's hockey. Four-time Canadian Olympian and Hall of Fame member Jane Hefford agrees.
I'd like women and young girls all around the world to feel like there's a future for them in the sport, whether that's as a player, a coach, an administrator, or a fan. The more women we have involved, I think it's great for the long-term viability of hockey, and we keep the game growing for years to come.
The temporary statue also stands as a milestone for the success of women's hockey to date, but a reminder, too, there's still work to be done. An eighth female player will be inducted into the Hall of Fame later this month.
Such a great story. Jessica, what can we expect tonight?
Clear skies for the most part. A few clouds through the overnight, Nathan and Michelle, but it's going to increase as we head into the day tomorrow, and then we're watching for that chance of rain. Now, timing-wise, it's likely to roll in the middle of the day, and then it continues throughout the evening. Now, temperature-wise, we will stay above seasonal for a few more days, but as we get past Remembrance Day on Thursday, that's when the shift really rolls in. A cold front comes in, and our temperatures cool down a little closer to seasonal and then just below. So, getting into Tuesday, 14 degrees, that chance of those late-day showers. Sunshine returning as we mark the middle of the week and then getting in towards Remembrance Day. Comfortable, but the likelihood of seeing some late day rain, and that continues into your Saturday. So not a bad start to the week, but we will see a bit of a cool down. Nathan, Michelle.
Thank you, Jessica. And be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Jessica Smith and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.